The Venturi's Voice podcast brings together some of technology's brightest minds to discuss all things leadership, technology, and staffing. Keep the conversation going in the Venturi's Voice Slack group and have the opportunity to meet some of our amazing guests. You can download Venturi's Voice via iTunes or via the Venturi Group website at venturi-group.com. Today's guest is Felicity Winkley, the HR manager at Totally Money. Felicity, it's really good to have you on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time, especially kind of midweek afternoons. People tend to be in kind of full flow state at this point. So
yeah.
I really appreciate the time.
No problem.
It's actually really interesting, and I'm so excited to have you on the show, actually, because I have so many, I guess, questions and a lot of things that I've kind of been dealing with and kind of mentioning quite frequently in the Slack community that I have as well. And I suppose a lot of it comes down to like HR related queries, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm doing kind of a lot of thinking more so than ever before around kind of behaviors and people. And I tend to go down like incredible rabbit holes with things and overcomplicate everything. And I tend to find that I don't really kind of get anywhere at times. So I think it's great to have someone on the show like you who maybe have a little better process for, you know, I suppose, structuring a plan around things like, you know, creating more autonomy or, you know, building a culture in a certain way, you know,
yeah.
Hiring for certain things. I find it incredibly difficult coming from a background where it's kind of numbers orientated and things are really quantifiable. I think the fascinating thing for me about kind of people in HR is that nothing's kind of black and white. There's so many variables involved. So I can imagine that kind of building a structure can at times be incredibly challenging.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think the first thing that I would say is Totally Money, we're now in a kind of stage where we definitely wouldn't describe ourselves as a startup anymore.
Right.
We have been going since 2009, so we're well and truly a scale-up, I'd say, kind mm-hmm. of immature business. And part of that, I think, means that to begin with, you will have started with very little structure because you won't have had to worry about it necessarily.
Mm.
And then now what we're faced with is as you bring more people into the business and you grow in size, how do you keep autonomy and keep the kind of amazing family culture that everybody really values about working somewhere like this,
mm.
but at the same time have enough of a structure that you're able to support your employees and also, I guess, add a kind of process to their working life. And so that's, I think, the position that we find ourselves in at the moment, is trying to think how to do that. And especially if your management team and your employees are attracted to the business because it's flexible and because it's agile, how do you have enough of a structure but not too much and bring things in that might potentially be greeted by people with a little bit of cynicism?
Mm.
You know, if you come up with something that looks a bit too corporate, it's quite quickly rejected. So I think it's about finding the right balance for you.
I agree. It's interesting. And I think the train of thought is what I think a lot of people kind of struggle with, because there's almost like, in order to build the structures, there has to be a way that you kind of articulate things in your own mind. You kind of have to step outside yourself, I suppose, and try and alleviate kind of any balance. So it's almost like having to, for me, it's learning how to kind of do that internally is almost as important as anything. And an interesting structure that I think in a lot of business critical areas, you don't always necessarily have to do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the big things that helps in terms of considering it is maybe to think about communication. And that's something that we try to do a lot, because one of the things that we always strive to be is very transparent.
Mm.
So our CEO and our management team are very readily accessible. We all sit in one open plan office. It's really important to not have kind of, you know, executives tucked away in some kind of corner office where the door is always closed.
Mm.
But I think we can take for granted sometimes the fact that, you know, it's easy to feel like everything's very transparent and the messaging is being communicated and shared. But the more you grow, the more you have to actually have process and structure around that communication to make sure that everything is filtering down in the way that you want it to. So one of the ways that's useful, I think, to think about structure or kind of line management hierarchy is a little bit in terms of, well, if you've got news kind of filtering down, who's responsible for passing that along? Do you know what I mean? Just to make sure that everybody's appraised. I mean, like at Totally Money, we have a breakfast meeting every Thursday where we have kind of two or three little 5-minute updates from different teams so that we try and keep everyone up to date with what's going on. But still, obviously, it's very easy for things to slip through the net. So I think in terms of when you're scaling culture, that's one of the big things to think about. And actually, there's a lot of stuff written about it and probably expressed way more eruditely than I'm doing at the moment in terms of inflection points. So obviously when you're a small, you know, and there's an example which is based on kind of human evolution, when you're a kind of small hunter-gatherer community and you're all kind of migrating together, then you just move as one and you've got a shared common aim and you all just get on with it. You don't need too much planning and you don't need too much communication. But then as you settle down and you have a kind of community of maybe like five huts in a circle, how do you get the news from one hut to the next hut? And then as that grows and you become, you know, you expand to a kind of town of like 50 people, then you're probably going to have to put in a slight hierarchy of kind of village elders who are going to kind of pass out what's going on and also set the kind of code of conduct for how the township is going to behave and so on and so on. As you scale, it's going to get more difficult to kind of express those behaviours that you're looking for and keep everybody communicating and really aligned with what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, it's really interesting and well articulated as well. I think it falls down to the leadership element, and I think it's putting those initial kind of hierarchies in place, and then it becomes because I tend to find that it's not necessarily how the messages are filtered down vertically. It's very much horizontally that it tends to be a game of Chinese whispers, and especially you know, an interesting point of inflection, as you mentioned, is perhaps when you do mature and if you're fortunate enough as a business to get to that point where you do start to scale. I'm lucky enough to have been around that a couple of times actually, and I do find it really fascinating because it's all becomes around the people all of a sudden, and a set of infrastructures for communicating, as you put really well. I mean, it's for me, the egos play a big part in it. I've always found that, and I don't want to kind of harp on about this too much, but I think this is also a compelling point where kind of diversity can come into play, because I tend to find that, like, especially at the leadership level, if you get a lot of like-minded people and they're perhaps in disagreement, which is probably fair to say at times, for most organizations, you will get this kind of game of Chinese whispers, and it's absolutely fatal when you get to the point where, you know, you scale and then you have different teams operating in a different manner and to a different capacity based on the direction that they're having from their leaders. And that only happened because of that kind of horizontal level of communication. And I think for whatever reason, you can probably articulate this much better than I can, that with diversity, there seems to be kind of a commonality where, although a group of people who might be like-minded, you think, oh, well, that makes sense, we all kind of think alike, but it's the intricacies which people take into their own hands, and then ultimately, you know, the ego kind of plays a part, and there's not enough kind of discussion about it, because assumptions and things like that come into play. So I do think it's tremendously important to have that kind of piece, that diversity piece, at that level where it is kind of horizontal communication. But it's clearly easier said than done. Otherwise, I suppose there wouldn't be room for conversations like this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think diversity is definitely a big part of it. And the fact that you're not going to have a diversity of ideas and approaches unless that is reflected in the diversity of your senior management team or your wider business. I think another thing in terms of what you're talking about and, ensuring that you try and minimize the amount of ego at play is to really ensure that you have buy-in to what your core values are that are modeled at management team level. Mm. So I think you can't really expect to set out a value structure that your employees follow and that ideally you bake into your recruitment practice unless you have that behavior being modeled by the management team and to really, set a good example and role model for everybody else. So I think that's definitely something that we try and do as well. And one of our values being kind of rational, there's definitely a big priority on the fact that, you try not to take things personally if somebody disagrees with your opinion. Everyone has the right to give their opinion and everyone has the right to, ideally constructively criticize yours. And I think, just try and not take things personally and see what the data is saying and let that back up what your decision making says, rather than it being about ego or your standing within the business. If somebody junior is making a valid point and has the data to back it up, it shouldn't be trumped, for example, by somebody who's in the management team. And that's what we try to kind of live by, really.
Yeah. So how difficult is that to manage and stay on top of? And do you think that, I suppose, that's where HR comes in and where their responsibility comes in? How do we do that? Because I think, again, these things are always in principle very easy, but then in action, it becomes very, very difficult.
Oh, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't think anybody could say that they've got it absolutely nailed in terms of how to make sure that you do model your values, and the practice that you aspire to kind of follow on a daily basis. It's really hard. We only introduced our values, I think it was like March last year. We didn't have a set of values that we'd been using for several years, and we thought it was a good idea at a kind of all hands meeting to like workshop it all together, make sure that we got buy-in from staff as early in the process as possible, and then we tried to come up with something that was, there are so many kind of really terrible examples of corporate brand value decks online. I urge you to have a look. It makes for quite hilarious reading. But we tried deliberately to avoid things that are very common sense, like teamwork, and come up with things instead that actually make sense to us for our practices. It is hard. I would say that it's taken us, we're now 18 months down the line, and I would like to think that everybody now knows what they are and thinks about them in their kind of daily practice. But it's taken us a long time to get to this position. All you can do, I think, is one of the quite useful things to do is when you see them being modelled in a really productive way, or you see somebody who's done an amazing job and gone out their way and kind of been an amazing example of one of the values in practice, is to call them out and absolutely praise that in a kind of really public forum, like whether that's Slack, whether that's at a breakfast meeting, whether that's in our like quarterly staff award, which we call our like TM Star Award. Mm-hmm. Just to really make sure that you've got positive role models rather than using it as a stick. It should definitely be a carrot.
Yeah.
But I don't have any kind of amazing wisdom. I think it just takes a long time to try and bed it in.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's just commitment, isn't it? And
absolutely.
Adhering to that commitment to the best of everyone's kind of...
But I think definitely thought. Also coming up with a structure that makes sense for you and that is reflective of your culture. When you get to the business size that makes it necessary and valuable to have something like values, that's great. But, and it is important, obviously, to look around you and see what other businesses are doing. But there's that's only going to get you so far. For us, one of the ways that we thought would be a really like fun and memorable way of kind of absorbing the values into our culture is each value has been represented by a classic album. And then we've got those 12 inches like framed on our kitchen wall. Right. So that's like a nice little talking point. So somebody comes in and goes, oh, amazing, like Kraftwerk. You think, yeah, well, great. You know, what's not to love about Kraftwerk? But that album also represents Rational, which is like the first of our values. And then that's like a nice little conversation point as well.
And to the point that we were making earlier then on, you know, obviously there's not a right way to build kind of a structure. I think it's an organic thing that happens that's probably influenced predominantly by whoever kind of founded the company. And like you said, probably the hierarchy have most influence over the way that the kind of the culture is. I think that's probably fair to say. But still, coming up with a plan is still important. And I think everyone has like a different take on how to kind of build out, you know, a company that communicates effectively, a culture that people particularly enjoy, that's also, you know, effective commercially as well. I know that you kind of were interested to talk about kind of autonomy. I find that really interesting myself because I kind of have built my team with kind of autonomy really always at the kind of forefront of what I've tried to achieve. So, you know, again, it's not always something that people, well, I think what I would say on it is that it's something that I think a lot of people, a lot of managers mention that they'd like to try and do, but again, in practice, don't always do it. And I think it comes down to that commitment piece again. But for you, why has it been important, or why have you always kind of been interested to talk about, you know, the importance of autonomy?
I think the thing is, it obviously doesn't work. I think the first thing is that it doesn't work as a retrofit. Mm-hmm. So you either have a kind of autonomous culture that evolves in that way or you don't. I would struggle to picture an organization where you could go in and then start to implement a more autonomous way of working. Although I guess if you tried really hard, you might be able to get there. I think for us, we are autonomous. The fact that we're autonomous and the fact that we have a relatively flat hierarchy go hand in hand because you have an organization structure that basically says, okay, most of these people are on a level. And then by that very token, most of those people are responsible for their own domain and take accountability for it. So the way that that kind of works in practice is also partly because we don't have that many, you know, overlapping roles. We're not of that size yet. We are definitely getting there. And in particular, we are kind of, you know, highlighting areas where we have a lot of key man dependency and trying to kind of fill in some cover where that occurs. But generally speaking, most people are working on their own stuff and are happy to take responsibility for that and also are happy to be accountable. Part of the way that you do that successfully, I think, and I think we're really good at doing here, is to have a kind of no blame culture. So, you know, if somebody makes a mistake and things, you know, things break, mistakes happen, we kind of are almost daily releasing code into production. Things are bound to break. But then it breaks, you hold your hand up and you try and work out where it broke and then you fix it. It's not a witch hunt. You're not going to then kind of have that thrown back in your face for the next week. We just get on with it. And part of that is because we trust people to take responsibility for their own little domain and we let them get on with it. So I don't know if that entirely answered your question.
No.
But that's definitely kind of one way of kind of how to practice autonomy, I think.
Yeah, no, I think it's almost the lean approach, right? I guess, like, you know, fail fast.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that our CEO likes to cite quite regularly, which I think is also from the Lean Startup, is build, measure, learn. So, you know, we work in that cycle. You build, you measure, you see what the data is telling you. And if something's broken, you fix it. And then you learn from that and you move on and you build more and you build better. And that works. That's not just in tech. That works, you know, across the business, whatever department you're in.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's good practice. And I think, it boils down to the learning for me. With autonomy, and I think that's the key element of it, and sense of fulfillment as well.
Yes. I think
is very important, because if the sense of fulfillment that you'll get from someone giving you the autonomy to go ahead, make the mistakes, and then figure it out and achieve something, versus someone who kind of handholds you through, you know, maybe the first year of being somewhere. Like, how are you ever supposed to get a sense of fulfillment if it feels as though someone's always kind of instructing you on what to do, or you
Absolutely.
Know, like, oh, handle it. You're never going to feel good about the work that you're doing. So it's massively important, as much as that sense of fulfillment as anything, I believe.
Absolutely, but I think you can't achieve that unless you feel like you're being supported.
Right.
And so I think that's where it's really important that, again, the kind of management team are there as a support mechanism, mm-hmm. but not as a kind of driver, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you're left to get on with things. You're given responsibility. You don't have somebody kind of checking in at 4:30 every day, ticking you off on your to-do list, but you have that support there from across the business, like whenever you need it. And, you know, you get on Slack, you walk over and ask a question, everybody's accessible. We're all in the same space. And I think that's why you feel like you're empowered to be autonomous and get on with things, but you don't feel like you're just being chucked in the deep end.
I think that's so key. It's such a key point. I think an area which a lot of people struggle with, especially new managers.
Yeah.
I think if you've come directly from working hands-on, whatever your career is, and you may have achieved a level of success at that and feel very competent in doing that work. You know, the reality of that situation is that you're kind of very busy, if we can just say that. And from being busy, you feel that that's kind of a loss of your success. And then you get into a management role and you kind of associate, perhaps on a subconscious level, being busy with achieving and doing your job correctly. But actually, it's a much more calculated approach that needs to be taken when you move into a position where you're kind of managing people. And
yeah.
not always being on top of things is the answer. Actually, more often than not, it's probably not the answer. But it's very difficult, I've found, to see managers make that transition and feel comfortable not being busy and not being kind of all over the team. I think that's one of the more common errors that you do see within managers, and especially like new managers.
Yeah, but I mean, in some ways that feeds back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of having a very flat structure,
mm-hmm.
and having that autonomous structure, is that although we do have, obviously we have a kind of underneath the management team, we have middle managers who are managing maybe one or two or three direct reports within their team.
Mm.
We don't have any people who are just doing staff management. Everybody is actually practically engaged. Everyone is busy doing the doing and not just kind of delegating or doing the people management piece. And so I think that avoids that problem. Because you will never have somebody who has that kind of degree of disconnect. And that also means that I guess you save a lot of time kind of having conversations about what exactly somebody's been doing, because you never lose that understanding. And then you can just get on with the important role of kind of mentoring, supporting, and very easily kind of identifying areas for developing that person.
Really interesting. And I wanted to kind of speak from your experiences as well, like personally within, you know, your career as well. It must be an interesting job role, because you spend a lot of time analysing this, I suppose, just in general from looking outwards. is it interesting then, do you kind of, are you always consciously thinking about these things through your own experiences at work? It must be like a really interesting role to have because of that.
I think it's great in terms of, I spend a lot of time thinking about how to make things better here. And I think my job is made easy by the fact that our CEO is so driven about making it like the best place to work. To that extent, you know, we can obviously measure ourselves by participating in things like Great Place to Work or Best Companies, or the fact that we measure our staff engagement on a monthly basis using PCON. We have what we call the Employee Advisory Board, or the EAB, that we catch up with on a 6-weekly basis. We have all of these practices in place to inform kind of how we can improve going forward. But you're right, I am also a member of staff, and I've also worked in a number of other organisations that are very different to this one. So I come with my own kind of agency, I guess. And I also try and remember that for me, I think it's very important that while I am a kind of representative to the business of like what's going on at CEO or management team level, I'm also, I take it potentially even more seriously that I serve as a representative for the entire staff. And so I will basically, if I discover something that I think is wrong that needs improving, I will kind of very vigorously go in there and try and set that right. And so when it comes down to, I don't know, kind of looking at somebody's ability to maybe work from home one day a week or something like that, I definitely see myself as a rep for that member of staff rather than a rep for the business. And I guess it's about getting that balance right.
Yeah, interesting. Really interesting. You know, you as you kind of progress as well, it seems that you have kind of such a good grasp on things, but I'm sure there's still a lot of areas that, you know, you want to kind of continue to progress in throughout your career. You know, what are those areas that someone such as yourself, a HR professional, you know, constantly strive for? Is there kind of that vision in which you hope to achieve? Is it I'm sure it's some of the things that we've already kind of covered.
Yeah, I mean, I think me personally, I'm definitely thinking about the next few years and how to get to a more kind of senior stakeholder level, whether that's head of people or chief people officer, or, you know, that's the kind of thing that I would imagine people of my level are also kind of looking at. And one way of doing that is by doing, you know, whether it, you know, professional qualification or some kind of charter certification or something like that is obviously one way of doing it. But I think the other thing that you have to try and do is constantly improve what you're doing within your own organization. And so that's finding ways of adding more value to the business by trying to be more strategic, by trying to get ahead of the curve. And I think with an organization like us at the moment, we are growing so much, we're taking on so many more roles, and part of that is then trying to make sure that you are recruiting the right roles, and then the people that you're recruiting are the right kind of fit for that, but also not losing sight of who you've already got in the business and making sure that you're still developing that talent. I guess it goes back a little bit to where we started with the conversation about structure, is that organizations bigger than us would be looking at that in a much more structured way in terms of kind of development of employees and succession planning and tools like that. I think we kind of struggle with that because we still have to be a bit more reactive. And I don't think that, for example, formal succession planning here would necessarily work. Mm-hmm. But that's the kind of thing that I can have an eye on in the background and try and maybe build out a little bit more going forward. And that's definitely like a way that I could improve my own skills and also bring value to what the business is doing over the next few years.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
I thought really enjoyed the conversation. So hopefully we can catch up again soon. Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.